Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
Welcome back, Derek.
Yes, I'm back. How did Alan do? Did he do an adequate job?
Oh, he always swears a lot. Nah, he did. He did a good job filling in. And your job is safe. Thanks, Alan. Kevin Callum was on a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And now he's on that...
The mystery trip. I've been looking at the postings. Have they said, because last thing I saw, he was still being blindfolded.
Yeah, he's being blindfolded. They were in Red Lake about to catch the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wouldn't have internet action after
that.
Yes,
you wouldn't know.
We don't know. My money is still in Opiskwaya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that right along the border?
It's way up there, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see where he ends up.
Very cool. How long of a drive was it, did they say?
Well, it's like a 24-hour drive,
mm-hmm.
Right?
It's a long ways up there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we did that in one go. Mm. Switching drivers
Did...
Woodland Caribou.
Woodland Caribou, yeah.
Yeah, because that's a fly-in spot from Woodland Caribou, right?
Have you ever thought going back and getting your hoodie?
Nope. Nah, I'm sure the bears have eaten it by now. That's a shame. But anyway, we got a few things to talk about this week. You're back.
Yes,
I'm back. We're talking about your trip. So we received a couple of emails from people because you had asked, hey, what do you like about our show? What don't you like about our show? And that sort of stuff. We received emails from a few people saying that they enjoy it when we chat about our paddling trips.
Oh, okay.
So the people that sent those emails in,
mm-hmm.
This is for you. Killarney Provincial Park.
Mm-hmm.
You were there. That's become... Now, when I first got into canoe tripping out this way, Algonquin Park was the place to go.
Yes.
Right?
And that's where I mean, almost always went.
Yeah. And now it's just become so busy.
Yeah. It's,
that you got to look... I mean, I do a lot of Temagami now.
Yeah.
Because Killarney has gotten popular.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a spot. You totally... I was saying, dude, you got to bend over because you got a horseshoe up your butt. You totally lucked into a spot. Mm-hmm. But just checking, like, why is Killarney so popular? It's on the shores of Georgian Bay.
Yes.
So you have the option to... Yes.
So you can access Georgian Bay from the park, and then there's parts like Philip Edward Island, which is outside the park. So it's first come, first serve, still Crown Land camping. The area is nice. You get some altitudes from some of the peaks. It's all natural granite and white stone.
White quartzite.
Yeah, it's amazing to go through, and it's so... When Siobhan was trying to talk to the kids, what's going to be like compared to Algonquin? And it's like, well, it's going to be the same. Well, it's not really the same. It's not.
There's trees and rocks.
Yes.
And water.
Yeah. So it's very fascinating topography. And the water's cleaner. You don't have a lot of the tannin lakes and like you do in Algonquin. And
well, there's the lakes with the clear sapphire blue water. There's
exactly.
A few of those.
Yeah.
You get the pine and hardwood forests still. White quartzite hills and it's the cliffs that are pretty cool. The La Cloche Range, it's right through there, and has the La Cloche Silhouette Trail and the Crack. Now, the Crack is actually part of the La Cloche.
Yes.
So the Crack is 6 kilometers and the La Cloche is 80.
Yeah, 78 or something, 78 kilometers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get the wildlife of moose, deer, bears, wolves, lynx, and beaver. I've never seen a lynx in the wild.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
No. Lots of species of reptiles, amphibians, and birds. The Group of Seven artists painted there and helped preserve it from being logged.
Yes.
So they were big. They're big reason why it was.
And they... So I... We learned this. I was kind of surprised. I was surprised because I didn't know. It's like, how come I didn't know this? But anyways, Tom Thompson was not Group of Seven.
Oh, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that until
he inspired all these people to get up there.
These.
And
so
after he died,
about a year after he died, the Group of Seven, they formed together because they all knew Tom Thompson.
Yeah.
They were all the same part of the same artist group. And so they formed Group of Seven about a year after he died. And so just thinking of him, they said, you know, it's so they're all mourning his loss, yada, yada, yada. I just yada, 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 Tom Thompson.
Yada, 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 yada. Well, maybe they just didn't like him and were waiting till he ran away somewhere. Now that he's gone, now we can form our own group. Yeah, secret handshakes and everything.
Yeah. So I went to, I don't know, what is it called? The main art gallery in Ottawa. And that's where I learned this, because we were reading about Tom Thompson and they talked about him and his artwork and then how, following his death, Group 7 formed. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. If you go to the AGO here, the Art Gallery of Ontario, they got a whole bunch of Group of 7 paintings.
Yeah.
Killarney's also a dark sky preserve and has a small observatory.
It is nice because, well, you are, you know, you don't have cell coverage either. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and it's nice. Well, even in Algonquin or up along that area, it's like you can see brightness on the horizon. It's like, oh, is that North Bay or, oh, is that whatever? So there's a lot of light pollution in Algonquin Park. Like, you have to be really deep in the park to miss it out, right? And so while we were there in Killarney, we did have approaching the supermoon. So it was pretty bright early on in the night, and then the moon set, and then it got dark. So, it's like, wow, it gets really dark. It's like your starlight lit pretty much, right? So
yeah, that's a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of maintained canoe routes.
Very well maintained. So I haven't explored a lot of Killarney. So I've been through previously with, like Bell Lake, David Lake, Three Mile Lake, Gray and so on. And then this trip was Johnny Carlisle, Bell Lake and whatnot. So I've been in the southern part of the park and up the north part, there's a lot of crown land outside the park, a lot of remote camping. And so that's sort of what we want to start exploring in the next few years. We're gonna get away from Algonquin. It's too busy now.
Yep.
And we're going to start doing... I want to get into the north part of Killarney.
I think the north part of Killarney, because it's all that extra time to come up and around through Sudbury and everything to get through.
It's a bit of a...
I think a lot of people from down this way just say, I'm not going
that. No, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But...
And same thing like with Algonquin in previous years, if you were about 3 or 4 portages in, you rarely saw people.
Yeah.
But not anymore. You get a lot more people going to get away from the people. So you could be in the middle of Algonquin, you think you're remote, and it's like, oh, look at that. A group of 3 canoes just went by.
Well, and that was this thing is like, okay, you know what? We're going to go up to the north end of the park.
Hmm.
And you go up through North Bay and you head down and across the top. And then in through there. And that used to be the other thing. It's like, we're not seeing anybody. There.
Yeah.
And not anymore.
It's pretty busy.
Yeah. So you got to go farther. Like I say, my park of choice tends to be Temagami these days. Because it is a lot more rugged and not as maintained.
Exactly. You're a bit more rugged.
So a lot of people are just seeing that and going, we're not. There's days where I hit portages going, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
So how was your trip?
It was good. It was really good. It was hot. So when we booked it, we took what was available at the time. We booked about 5 days out from our trip. And so I had to map it out, trying to figure out what was where and what was available. So, you can do the calendar view and the map view. Anyways, we managed to cobble together 6 nights. And so only on Carlisle did we not move sites. So first 2 nights was Johnny, 2 different campsites. Then 2 nights on Carlisle, same campsite. And then 2 nights on Bell Lake, different campsites. Because we couldn't string 2 nights together except for on Carlisle.
Right.
So we were pretty much always moving. But it was nice. It was got the kids up into. It wasn't a lot of work. It was like some of the days it was like less than an hour of paddling, and so it wasn't very intense.
Yeah, right? It just gives you practice tearing down and putting up.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Packing up again.
Yeah.
So, it was really nice. It was warm. It was dry. We had clear nights, lots of starlight, early nights. We had quarter moon, half moon, and so on.
Yeah.
And so what was it? The first 2 nights we were there was the peak of the Perseids, which I On the very first night, we had the moon plus some cloud cover. And as I was laying there, I looked up and I saw the light, the sky, just the clouds brightly lit white one time and brightly lit red one time. And I thought, well, that's got to be Perseids. But we never saw any. That was the only two flashes I saw. I never saw any streaks. Didn't see any of the Perseids.
Hmm.
And so we looked early, went to bed at like, you know, shortly after dark. And then I was up from 12 till 2 a couple nights and nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Clear sky too. Like I was looking up and it's like, oh, stars are very bright. But I didn't see any of the Perseids.
That sucks.
So and I'm wondering, which is, it's all about the leading edge of Earth, and I got to do a little bit of science here to see, is the Perseids in the early part of the night, or is it in? We met a retired Oshawa firefighter up in Killarney on Johnny Lake, and he was saying that the best viewing is like around 1:32 in the morning. So I was up at 1:32 in the morning and nothing.
I've done the same sort of thing. This is the perfect viewing time. Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning, between yeah. 3 and 4 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to get up 3 or 4 in the morning, and you're out there. I could be sleeping right now.
Getting a crick in my neck looking up.
Right? such a crick in the neck.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was really excited about the Perseids, but I didn't see anything. I let everybody sleep, and I was out there on the rock and just staring at the sky, enjoying it, and it was quiet, no bugs, because it was nice and cool, and I thought, if I start seeing stuff, I'm going to wake everybody up.
Yep.
But didn't see a thing, so I let everybody sleep.
Going back to the woodland caribou, I was up one night waiting for the northern lights.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
And everybody, I'm not waiting for the northern lights. But let me tell you, when I called everybody, you got to get up and see that. Everybody was up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what you, I mean, anything astronomical event.
Exactly.
It's cool to see,
it's not
right?
something you see all the time either, right?
Well, that's like, it's the super blue moon. It's the corn moon out this week.
It's, and yeah.
Usually, it's like, hey, look at all those clouds behind. Yeah. There is the full moon.
Yeah. And yeah, and the clouds is the northern lights.
Going to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. There is
oh, this,
like,
this yeah, morning. Yeah, was it? When
it was huge.
Yeah, it was. It was. I looked up and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, watch the road. Watch the road.
Why? No one else is. so unfortunately, yeah, you didn't get to see that. I've never seen them up. What, like
I've
you say, you're just sitting there relaxing and
yeah,
and waiting for it, and never.
And like when we didn't think ahead about when we want to plan the trip for. And then after we had it booked and a couple of days later, Siobhan texted me. She goes, Perseids, it's the peak. The first night we're there. It's like, oh, that's awesome. I've never been in the park with when we're in the middle of a meteor shower. And so I was very excited and then disappointed.
I Whatever. Was happy. Then I was sad.
Yeah. So,
but yeah. Hey, bright side. You didn't get hit by a meteor.
True.
So
true
you're
story.
Happy again. Yeah. But what a story that would have been. Now I'm sad.
Yeah. Rare event. Yeah. Man gets knocked in the head with a mirror.
There's another concussion.
Yeah. It's a nice tattoo you got inside of your head there. Not a tattoo. It's a meteor strike.
Yeah, it was a meteor strike. Yeah. Did you know, now you didn't do much portaging and stuff though.
No, we had, this was funny and I'm glad I didn't say anything to the guy because, well, the road into Bell Lake, have you been on that road?
Not in ages.
It is so narrow. Like you have to drive into the woods to pass another car. Anyway, so I'm cruising along pretty good, you know, avoiding other traffic. And then there's a guy in front of me and he's doing like 15 kilometers an hour. Maybe peaking at 20-25. It's like, dude, you're the traffic was piling up behind us and there was like 3 or 4 cars behind me and it's like, man. And so anyways, he parks right in the gap to unload right at the beach at Forbell. It's like, well, okay, I'll find a parking spot because he's taking up that whole gap. Anyway, so I come back and so this man was in getting tickets just for me. He seemed nice, whatever. Walked back. He goes to the car that I followed in. It's like, oh, Well, he drives slow, but he seems like a nice guy. And then just out of the blue, he starts chatting with me and, oh, hello, what are you doing? Where are you going? This, that, the other thing. And so I said, oh, we're going to Johnny. And so because we were starting to put stuff on the Bell Lake Beach. He goes, oh, no. It's that way, out of that end of the parking lot. Your portage is from this parking lot. You can go to Bell this way or go to Johnny the other way. It's like, well, I'm glad I bumped into you because I thought I had to go to Bell Lake first. So, yeah, so we just, we portage right out of the, from the car over into Johnny, right? So it was like funny that I didn't get enraged at him for going like 10 kilometers an hour. He saved me a lot of trouble.
We thanked him for the information of the portage. Then I punched him for his bad driving.
Yes.
His slow driving.
But yeah, so it was good. We got there fairly early, unloaded, did the portage right off the bat, and almost immediately came across our first beaver dam. You know, you see beaver dam, you can kind of slip over them. This thing had like a 6 or 7 foot drop. It's like, you know, we sidle up to it. It's like, I think we're going around.
Just roll over this one.
So, yeah, so it was like we were on the water 150 meters, and it's like, oh, well, I guess we're going around. It's like,
we're here.
Yeah, we barely got everything situated, loaded, started paddling, and it's like, oh, unloading again. So there was the beaver dam we had to portage around, and then there's the 310 from the Bell parking lot into Johnny. But other than that, oh, there was one other beaver dam, and it's right where Johnny Lake turns into Carlisle Lake, and the beaver dam just didn't make any sense to me. You're in the middle of this very narrow, marshy area. There's no flowing water. The water, the beaver dam is like 2 or 3 inches above the water, and the water level's the same on both sides. It's like, what's wrong with this beaver?
New beaver. It was their practice field.
It's a practice. It was
a beaver school.
It's their beaver school. Because it is like, well, this doesn't make sense. There's no flowing water. You couldn't hear any water flow. There's nothing there. So I guess, yeah, maybe it was just a college for beavers. Advanced lodge and dam making.
Did you see any beavers?
No, we didn't. But when we went over that little hump of a beaver dam, I saw a turtle scoot up from underneath the canoe. It was like, oh, we just ran over a turtle. So we did see a turtle. We did see a couple snakes swimming. We saw a bear on Highway, what is it, 637? We were halfway down to Killarney, and a bear looked at us and ran off into the woods from the road. So that was the only bear we saw.
Oh, no, the special family's here.
Yeah, look out.
So at least you didn't see him in the middle of a...
True.
Your campsite.
Exactly, yeah.
So from last year to this year, have you noticed a difference in your kids?
So they never complained once about carrying packs. They have their own packs.
Right.
And so various stuff goes in them that we need that day on the trip, like snacks or rain jackets or first aid kit that goes in the kids' packs, right? So like I loaded them up pretty good. I had water in the packs, but Beckett used to complain all the time. Oh, but he didn't say a thing. We just threw it on his back and, okay, get going. We didn't have a lot of portages either, so it's not like they had a great opportunity to complain. But yeah,
setting up and tearing down and...
No, yeah, they were really good about it. And so it was always their job to lay out the ground tarp and put the beds together, inflate, and set out the sleeping bags and whatever, right?
Right.
So that was good. Not a complaint, and they had lots of free time, right? So, yeah.
And you're only paddling an hour a day.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. We spent more time setting up and breaking down than we did traveling. So, yeah, it was good. The kids, you know, the kids are rolling with it. They're getting more used to the just doing the chores around camp and keeping things tidy and straightening things up and make sure garbage goes in the right place. And
so they were more in a swing of it this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we've noticed. Every year it's just they get a little bit better and better.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and so Stella's at, well, Stella's 14, but she thinks ahead. She'll do stuff without asking now.
Right.
And it's really impressive. It's like, so she'll do whatever, clean this up or set that up or whatever, right? She's already thinking ahead. It's like, oh, that's amazing.
See?
So
when you're old, which apparently you already are.
Yeah.
And you need somebody to be taking you to the back country.
Exactly. Yeah.
She'll be there for you.
Exactly.
Right?
So, yeah, it is nice to see that they're really into it and enjoying the back country. And it's, we do a little bit of car camping, but I like to get them into the back country. I everything that I've read and everything I've heard people talk about, and I believe it too, is you can't really appreciate nature, appreciate the environment and animals and the forest and whatever, if you don't get out there and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Be part of it.
Yeah.
So they're not city kids for sure.
Good.
They're not city kids. So it's, yeah, it's nice.
Let's talk your adventures.
Oh, yes. Yes. Where's my list of stuff here? So, where's that?
Second page.
Yes, there he goes. So we chose to do the crack on the day that we were laid over on Carlisle. So we didn't have to move that day, didn't have to break down camp. So we got up and we went paddled down Kakakis, and right at the end is where the trail to the crack is. So we had like 2 kilometers to the top, right? But it was hot and dry and a lot of people. Lot of people.
Well, because I think you can drive there, right? There's a parking lot nearby.
There is a parking lot. It's, what, 5 or 6 kilometers to the crack from the parking lot to the side of the highway. And the whole area is very accessible. But, yeah, it was neat to watch the kids trying to figure out how to climb and go up and down. And you know, I'm constantly worried about them. Like, I guess it's just the bulletproof nature of kids, but it freaks me out when they walk up to the edge, when they're up top, and they walk up to the edge and look over. It's like, what are you doing?
Well, I do that.
It's, yeah, but you don't know if the kid's going to lose his balance or whatever. It's like, what? It's like, you're getting too close to the edge.
So we used to call Mackenzie Dangerous Dan, because some of the things he would do. Oh. Dude, don't do that when your mother's looking.
He made me cringe so many times. I was like, whoa!
Hey, Dad, I got 1 foot over the edge.
Exactly, right? So, but yeah, so we brought like 3 liters of water on that for that, just that quick day trip.
Yeah.
And it's not a long ways up, so I thought, 3 liters of water is great. Anyways, we were rationing water towards the end. It's like, we're almost about to camp. I'm going to make more water. Everybody drank so much water that day. Like, I think I filtered. So I have one of those platypus, 4-liter platypuses, yep, gravity filter.
We got one as well.
And so that day, I think I did 4 bags of water. So that's a lot of water, yeah, you know, with everything that we did throughout the day. But the trip to the crack, everybody was dehydrated. Everybody was just sucking back water by the time we got back to camp. And it's like, but yeah, so it was good. It was really good. It was fun to see them up there. And what a view up there. It's amazing. Yeah. And I had intended to do, like, I was, if it wasn't so hot, because we kind of changed our minds once we got up there, is I wanted to, like, we'll just do 1 hour along the Colossus Trail, and then 1 hour back, and then down to the canoe again.
Right.
But it was too hot, too dry, everybody was tired, it was like, we're out of here.
It was a good idea at the time.
At the time, yeah. Yeah, because I want to do a little bit of the trail, but yeah. No, next time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, and there's no, like, you can't just dip your bag into a lake and, because there's no lakes up there.
No, right? There isn't. There's no water
so
up
there's
top.
No water. Or
yeah,
no,
you have to bring everything with
water,
you. Yeah. Might find a mud puddle or two.
So the next thing you got to do is bring a couple extra liters in a backpack.
Yes. Yeah. So our 3 liters of water was not enough for 4 people.
Yeah.
And it was just a quick trip up and a quick trip down.
See, I always do a minimum 1 liter per person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, even still, if it's hot, mm-hmm, and humid.
Yeah. Next time.
Yeah. It's just going to kill you. Yeah. See? So now they know what
so
to expect.
So many people up there. That was, we were surprised. But yeah, it was nice. It was nice to see it. It was the, that scramble up the granite It was like or marble quartzite, whatever it is. And you look out over the hills, it's like, it's pretty amazing looking. It's just spectacular.
Yeah. Well, and like I say, I mean, that's why everybody parks at the trailhead and makes the 6 kilometer trip.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And so that night, what was it? Yeah, it was the first night at on Carlisle. We did, I normally don't do this, but I brought a little mini projector and we watched, what is it, Krasinski and Ryan Reynolds, It, cartoon movie type thing.
If,
that's it, If, imaginary friend.
Yeah.
So we watched that in the campsite, projected it onto a big sheet. So that was kind of fun. It was unique. But it was the only screen time anybody had the whole trip that one night. So that was kind of nice. It was novel for the kids. They sat in hammocks, and we sat in camp chairs and watched it in the trees.
Cool.
Yeah, it was kind of neat.
Bit different, neat. Eh?
It was different, yeah.
But, I mean, that's one of the things. Remember that time we were in Killarney and we brought the sheet and the projector?
Yeah.
That's just one of those memories that don't
exactly.
remember.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, yeah, everybody gets rid of, you know, get away from the technology, get it. But sometimes
it's
part of the memory, right? As long as they're not on the phone all the time, then. So be it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And there weren't too many bugs. What was nice. So we got to most of the stuff we did. There was only one campsite, which was on Johnny, and we had a marsh in around us. So we had a lot of bugs that campsite. But otherwise, there was more bugs in my backyard than we had in Killarney.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice change.
Yes.
Especially for you.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because the weather was so hot and dry. And I say hot and dry. It was hot and dry for our week. But when we checked in at the park, I asked about fire bans. He says, no, we're getting way too much rain to have fire bans, he said. So, yeah, awesome.
What'd you take to eat?
Oh, yes. So there's always the first two nights where you treat yourself. And so we...
Steak and lobster every night.
Yeah. We had actually pre-prepared a pasta meal, just a basic pasta meal. But then we forgot it at home in the freezer. So it's like, hey, I guess we're having pizza tonight. So we cobbled together some quick pizzas. And the second night we had steak. And from there, it was freeze-dried meals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have OTG meals for the rest of the night. So that was nice. I like the OTG stuff. And lots of snacks. Oh, there was one morning. I was tired. It was the morning after we had hiked up the crack. And I could have made scrambled eggs and whatever, and I was just not feeling it. So I was looking in the food barrel. I was like, what do I got? And Siobhan was expecting me to make her breakfast, but she didn't want what I made. So I had the pita pockets, I had mustard, and I had sliced garlic pickles, dill pickles. So I shoved some pickles into the pita pocket, filled it with mustard, and what a nice meal that was. I had that for breakfast two mornings in a row.
Mustard pickles on a pita.
Yeah. It was fantastic. It was really good.
So I'm not going to say anything, because if you put peanut butter, brown sugar, and bologna on a sandwich.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good.
It's good.
Yeah.
So pickles, mustard on a pita. Okay. I mean, the only thing realistically you're missing from that is like lunch meat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
From a regular sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And by then we're a couple days in, so there's no fresh meats or no kielbasa or nothing left, right?
I think Siobhan's just being picky.
I know. It was so good. But I love mustard. But anyways, so that was interesting. It was like, oh, I just created a new meal. And I'm going to have that at home now.
See? Did you do any fishing?
Did not do any fishing. Did not even bring a rod and reel or nothing. Well, my thought going into it was, so I do want to get the kids into fishing. But I was also thinking that these are all access lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Bell Lake, Johnny Lake, Carlisle Lake, they all have direct access. They have their own roads, their own launches. And I thought, you know what? These are going to be all fished out. I'm not even going to waste my time. But
it's more about just the catching.
Yeah, or just the casting.
But I didn't
even bother to bring it. I thought, you know, I'm not going to complicate things. I'll just leave all that stuff at home, and I didn't even miss it. Yeah. And but we did see a couple big fish jump.
Like,
well, where did that thing come from?
Now, if you had your fishing gear, you would not have seen that.
True. Oh, and for...
Fish can smell fishing gear.
I think so. And for a few of the lakes, I can't remember which ones. So Bell Lake for sure. We weren't on David, but I know David's that way. But there's quite a few of the lakes in there that doesn't matter what time of year it is, there's no trout fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can catch them. You're going to catch them, but you can't keep them because it's all catch and release. You can't control what you catch. But yeah, you can't keep trout on any of those lakes, which is it protects.
Well, through the province, there's like slot limits.
Exactly. And, yeah.
You know, this year you can't fish for this fish. Next year you can, or 3 years. I know Aurora trout rotates the lakes that you can fish for them and that sort of deal. Yeah. So you just got to be aware of your fishing regulations.
Exactly.
For your area, right.
Yeah. So yeah, that was nice. It was good. It was. I did. I did get to read.
Liar.
So I brought one of those apocalypse type thing, Colonel Mass Ejection, everything goes. It's called Powerless World, Derek Schupert. Anyways, I came across the book, I bought it, and I've had it since last fall. Anyways, so I read that book, and that was gone in 2 days. I read it. And then I stole Siobhan's book. And she had a James Patterson book. And so that was gone in 2 nights. And then I went to take Stella's, and Stella was like, no, my book. She had something called Labyrinth, but it's like Labyrinth.
Like the movie?
Is that like, that's what I asked.
David Bowie?
Is that
Bowie?
Like the movie? And no, it's about somebody from ancient times and a girl from modern times, somehow time travel back and forth. And it's like, oh, that sounds stupid.
Was there a Minotaur involved?
I have no idea. But yeah, it was. So I didn't read that because Stella wouldn't let me have it. But that thing was, that should have taken me 4 days, because that thing was like 2.5 inches thick, 3 inches thick. It was a, it was a thick novel.
Did you write this? Dear Diary, I read today.
I really enjoyed it. And so I sat around camp. Everybody napped in hammocks, and I read a book.
Wow.
It was great.
Well, speaking of books, between Kevin Callan's garage sale and our friend Dave Wilfong, because he's moving, so he had a big garage sale.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, I've picked up 78 canoe paddling books in the last month.
Did you get anything from me?
I think there's only two doubles in all the books that I've already got.
Yeah.
So I'll probably pass a couple off to you for your bookshelf.
That'd be nice. I do have, I have a collection. I've been collecting older books, and I kind of got out of it in the last few years, but, I've got a bunch of books. A lot of them are like 150 plus years old. Like I got some really old ones.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I got boxes of them. I used to collect them from back when I lived in the Maritimes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I need to redo my library.
Yeah, well, I got books on the floor right here. I got books all over the shelves.
Yeah.
I got books and totes. Yeah. So 78 new books on paddling.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll see your two books you read. Rich of 76.
Yeah. So I spoke about the water filter. So what filter do you have?
It's a Platypus 4-liter.
Yeah, I have the same one. And I had bought a new filter last year, used it one trip. And I think it was last fall in the Moon River. And I went to use it this time, and I couldn't get water to go through that filter.
See, at the end of last season, I was having a bit of issues with my, so I had to back flush it.
I do that too,
right?
Yeah.
So I ended up back flushing it more times because it's towards the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm finding is, yeah. And then I would flip it around and run like two or three bagfuls of water backwards through it.
Yeah, that's what I did too.
Yeah.
and but I couldn't get any water run through it. So I went to Sail to get filters, and the guy says, "Yeah, good." I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for the Platypus gravity filter. I just need the filter replacement." He's basically, "Yeah, good luck with that."
Yeah.
I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "When they get it in, they disappear within a day."
Yeah.
And he said,
"I was lucky to get mine."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, and I've ran into this issue before with air mattresses or whatever at Sail. And I said, the same conversation I had with the guy this time too, as I did with somebody else last time, is like, they have no control over what product they bring into each store. The managers can't say, "I need more of these, they're popular." They have no control over that. It's whatever they get sent.
Hmm.
And so every couple months, somebody will decide that, okay, we're going to give them a bunch of Platypus filters for gravity filters. And he said, "Yeah, it's you're better off going on to Amazon or whatever." Yeah. And anyways, I found a filter. When we checked in at Clarney Outfitters, I said, "Hey, do you have filters?" "Yeah, we have filters." So it's the same filter as Platypus, but it's MSR. Because MSR has the same gravity filter.
As long as it works.
Yes, exactly. It's identical except a different labeling. But it was like, so the gravity filter itself, so I could have bought a new one at Sail. It was like $186 or something. And so, but they didn't have any replacement filters. They didn't want to buy a whole new setup. So when I went to Clarney Outfitters, it's, "Yeah, here you go." It's like, "Oh, $92 on sale for like $74. It's like, yay.
Well, that's the expensive part of the filter.
I know.
Right?
It's like, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Two big Ziploc bags and hose from your aquarium into a filter. I mean, you're telling me I'm wrong.
Yeah. Like the profit that you make. It's like I've done wrong in life. I should have been creating outdoors gear like Platypus or something.
Right. How were your air mattresses?
Ah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is essence of our trips from last year.
Yeah. So I had to convince Siobhan because her air mattress kept losing air. And so I said, at home, Beckett doesn't sleep in his bed all the time. He'll sleep on the floor sometimes.
Right.
It's like, give him the one that leaks. He doesn't care. Right? So anyway, by night three, that's what she ended up doing, or night four. And so the two kids, they don't care. They're young.
Yeah.
Their bones can handle it.
Right.
But my Nemo, unfortunately, is leaking a bit now. I think I've had it for about 5 years now. And so I was a bit disappointed. Like, two or three times a night, I'd wake up.
The ground.
Yeah. Pump it back. Wasn't fully on the ground, just enough that I'm a side sleeper, so yeah. It's like, I'm going to get a bed sore on my hip if I don't pump it back up again. So, yeah, we of the four air mattresses, one of them didn't leak.
So, and you know what? I've never had a Nemo until last year.
Yeah.
And then we've gone through three of them.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Now we're back to our old Thermarests.
I've had, like, Big Berthas. I've had Nemos. And so I've got some of the old-style Thermarest inflatables, which aren't very thick. They're, like,
an inch thick.
Yeah, and that stuff. I need more now. Anyways, I was it last night? I think it was... Yeah, Monday night or last night, I went online and I found, I think it's called Zero Gear or something, and I bought a couple air mattresses and pillows and stuff, right? So we'll see. They've got a reflective layer for reflecting your heat back to you, plus the top layer is like a kind of a synthetic stuff for soft, and then things like 3.5-4 inches thick. So we'll see. The key thing is holding air.
So, you think?
Yeah, that's the important part. Yeah. Oh, and the other Nemo, speaking of Nemo, because the air mattress leaks, in the last few years, I've gotten the habit of, I have a Nemo 12 by 12, and it's a bug tent. And I've been using it as a tent for the last couple of years.
Is that the one we used last year on our trip?
Yeah. Yes. So
it did well.
It did do well. So I've used it on the Minas Link. I've taken it with family up in north in Temagami. Me and Mike have camped in it. We were in a heavy downpour on, we're going to do Maple Mountain. And so we're on the side of a lake, and it was fine. We just tipped the sides down a little bit more, and you just have a tarp for the ground cover to keep yourself off the wet ground. And the water does, you only, we had some splashing, so I had to pull stuff about 12 inches away from the walls. Yeah. But when you have 12 feet by 12 feet, there's lots of room for stuff in there, right?
Yeah.
And so the old one I had, which was getting on 10 plus years old, I, when was Canada 150, 2017?
Because you got it then.
That's when I got it, yeah. So I've been using it since then. It, so it just started leaking last year. So you could see a couple drips forming in heavier rain, right?
Right.
So I went online. Nemo doesn't make it anymore. I found a place in Calgary, bought myself a brand spanking new 12 by 12. And so this trip is the first time we used it. And this thing has zero waterproofing. So,
really?
Yeah, we're all trying to sleep. My side leaked the most. So it didn't matter where I situated my head. I was getting dripped on the head. And so it's kind of hard to sleep when somebody's waterboarding you, right?
Unless you're over that sort
Chinese of water torture. It was like drip, drip, drip. It's like, oh, man. So I had to hang a second tarp. And it only rained on the very last night we were up there. So Friday night, Saturday morning, it rained a little bit, not a lot. But this thing just soaked up the water. So I'm gonna email or call Nemo and ask them what's going on. But they don't make them anymore, so there's not much they can do. But maybe they can suggest some waterproofing method I could use for the thing.
See, that was my Kelty tarp. I'd been using my Kelty tarp for a couple of years because it's only a couple of years old.
Yeah.
And then when we were up in Algonquin last, was that spring? Yeah, I guess it was spring. We went up there and hung it up and might as well have not even bothered hanging it up. It kept nothing out. All of a sudden. And it was a beautiful, perfect tarp. Brand spanking new. Only been used a couple of times. And it kept nothing out. First rain.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And so this is a bug tent, but still, as a bug tent, I do use it as a we sleep in it.
Yeah. Well,
the thing that we like about it is that the mesh almost disappears at night. And so you're there basically sleeping under a tarp. Mm-hmm. The bugs can't get to you. Well, not all the bugs. Like there was one trip in Temagami where I woke up and I saw a movement, Beckett sleeping on his back, and there's a frog on his chest. It's like, oh. And on this trip, it was on Carlisle, like out of a dead sleep. It's just think about the sound. Think of the sound of a, like maybe a hairbrush on a balloon.
Okay.
That sound, but really, really, really loud. And I'm like, what's that? And so I snapped awake out of a dead sleep. And I could hear this sound in one ear, and then I could feel something crawling around on top of my eardrum. So a spider crawled into my ear.
Ooh, dude!
And I could feel him crawling around deep inside my ear. I could hear him touching my eardrum. I could hear him in the little tiny hairs, the cochlear, whatever they're called. I could hear him in there. He's running around, and it's like, oh, it's a moist, warm place. Yay. So I was like, Sean, wake up. So I gave her a flashlight, and the ear canal curves, so she couldn't see a thing. So I just took a twig, and I killed it, but now I probably still have little spider legs in my ear. In hindsight,
okay.
I should have got some water in there.
Let's do a little poll. If you're out in the woods, would you rather see a bear at night or have a spider in your ear?
It was disturbing to feel him running around inside my ear canal.
That's like,
So he was making the noise, plus I could feel him.
It was the singing that bothered you.
It was the singing. That little bugger couldn't carry a tune.
Ooh, that just gives you the willies.
Yeah, it was so weird.
right?
And so it was, I had to kill him because I didn't know how to get him out. In hindsight, like I said, I should have got Siobhan to pour some water down inside my ear. Because I've seen videos of people chasing spiders out of people's ears just by pouring water in there, right? And so the water just going to, the spider's going to want to escape. So, yeah.
In hindsight.
In hindsight. Yeah. And so.
Does your first aid kit have a set of tweezers?
It does, yeah. Yeah, it does.
In hindsight?
No. See, that's metal tweezers, and I was too worried about... in the end, I just took a fairly large twig and just rolled it around like a Q-tip and killed the bugger.
Did you have a Q-tip?
No.
In hindsight?
No. So, I guess I could have used a Q-tip, too. But I was worried about damaging my eardrum, so I was just careful to just... stir things around.
Bare ear? Unless his brother was on the other side.
I got two of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's just ooey.
Yeah, it was weird. And there's that same night. Now, my dream didn't match what woke me up. So I think I actually heard something. But...
Hello in there!
It was a snuffling and a snorting noise. And
spider had a cold?
No, it was something was right against the mesh wall of the...
Just walking by? Rabbit or something?
Sniffling. I could hear sniffing. Like, so I thought, in hindsight, I'm thinking, was that like... didn't seem like it was a bear because I couldn't...
Raccoon?
Didn't make that... Yeah, I think maybe a raccoon.
Is there raccoons there?
Do they... Yeah, well, there was a lot of raccoons.
Really?
On Bell Lake? We could hear them in the forest everywhere.
Oh, it's probably a raccoon.
Chittering away. So anyways, I woke up. I heard the snuffling. I slapped the ground and yelled, hey, and it skittered off into the woods. So I don't know.
Maybe it was one of the kids trying to get back in.
Maybe.
Went up for a pee, couldn't find the door.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we only brought home one kid.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess the most disturbing thing of the whole trip was the spider.
Ugh.
Little bugger.
How was your canoe? You rented one, eh?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was going to use my own canoe that I just got repaired. And Siobhan didn't think that was a great idea because it's only a 14-footer.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, it carries a lot of weight. Like, it's got a large capacity, but... We needed the three seats, so normally Stella would sit on a pack and Becca would sit in the bow, but the kids are getting bigger. So as we've done in the last couple of years, we rented one. It was a Swift something. And it was 17.5 foot, 49 pounds, three-seater. Nice canoe. It was really nice. It was super lightweight, and it paddled nicely, handled nicely. So that was good. It was worth the price.
Good.
Yeah. Killarney Canoes, they're set up right on the side of Bell Lake. I was talking to the guy and so he goes, I somehow it came up in conversation as we were checking in that I had a rental. He goes, you know, we're $5 a canoe cheaper. It's like, why didn't you tell me that before?
Oops.
So, yeah, it was like they're like $50 a day, and Killarney Outfitters was like $56 a day or something, right? Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. They all have the same canoe. They all had Swift, carbon, Kevlar, whatever things, right?
Nice, lightweight.
Yeah, and they're very lightweight. Very nice boats.
Good.
Yeah. And almost brand spanking new.
Well, like, a lot of them will change their fleet after a couple of years.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So they say that every September, they take the rougher ones and sell them off. And they say usually between 10 and 20 a year they'll be selling. So, and they've got a lot of canoes.
So that's what you gotta keep your eyes open for, those sales.
I know, but you know, it's like a 5-hour drive to go up to buy a canoe.
Well, if you know you want it.
Well, you know, it's not that. I don't have to store it if I rent them. Yeah.
Six one half dozen the other.
Exactly, right?
Right?
So it all worked out. Yeah. It all worked out.
Good.
Yeah. So all in all, that's my trip. That was...
You got a little thing here about historical things.
Yeah. So one of them I don't want to talk about because I don't want to draw too much attention to it. The prison.
I don't want to talk about prison.
Yeah.
It was a good trip up until.
Yeah. So one of them I won't talk about, but the abandoned jail. So Burwash Prison, like we were on the way out, I saw a sign and I said, did you see that? She goes, what was that? That was prison. And so Burwash Prison was in the 60s and 70s. So it was a medium security. People usually had like 2 years. And, oh, who was it? There's a singer that you would know. I just can't remember what band. But anyways, they said, if you are there and you're not a jerk, you'll have an easy time of it. But if you're a jerk, then you're not going to have a good time because they're going to treat you badly. Anyway, so this guy is known to say that what a horrible prison this was. It was they're just so mean to you. And it's like, well, from this description and then him talking about that, sounds like he was a bit of a dick. Pardon my French. That one slipped out. But yeah, so Burwash Prison, it was, it ran for a couple of years. And then in the 70s, they decided it was too expensive to run. It was too remote. And then it was sold. And the military tried to create a training base up there. And then somebody privately bought it in the 80s and tried to create a goat farm, which failed. And there was a whole town site, like all these buildings for all the employees that worked there. Right.
Right.
And then, so the guards, employees, it was very remote. Right now it's the only thing, all the houses are gone, but the jail structure still remains. It's on private property, but you can get permission to go check it out. And so it's like, oh, that's interesting. I want to go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go and check out this old prison because apparently there's a hiking trail that goes right to it. And there's a sign right there, the Burwash Prison Hiking Trail. So
how far is it from the La Cloche Trail?
But you can't, they don't, yeah, it's halfway back to the Trans-Canada Highway.
Okay, because you were saying somebody tried to do a goat farm.
Yes.
You could rent out the goats for people to do the La Cloche Trail.
Portage, yeah, they can right? carry your gear.
They can carry all your gear on the hiking trail for 80 kilometers. And then you just return the goat.
Yeah, one goat carries the food for the group of goats, and then the other goats carry all your gear.
Right?
That's brilliant.
Isn't it?
I don't know how they do the crack, though, because you have to do the crack as part of the Cloche Trail.
Have you ever seen a goat climb?
I know, but that's a mountain goats.
The goat would be up there waiting for you. What are you talking about?
Maybe. You wouldn't want to hurt one of the goats. I feel worse hurting a goat than hurting a human.
This human would just have to carry the goat. Anyway.
But there's a lot of history in the area. Yeah. So I want to get the kids down and do the Philip Edward Island. And it's kind of sketchy, depending on the weather, to get out into Georgian Bay.
Yeah.
Unless you're in kayaks. But if you do the inner channel and stuff, and there's a lot to see, a lot to do, there's a lot of history. There is we saw it when I was did the trip with Mike, and we saw there's a star painted on a rock at the entrance to going into Killarney. And that was where the Voyagers used as their signpost, turn here, because you either go left and you go way around the peninsula, waste an extra week, or you follow the star and you go overland, which would take a day with the Voyageurs with all their gear, and just jump the peninsula. So that star is still painted there. And you know the round algae dots you see on rocks as mm-hmm. they grow? So apparently there's a formula to calculate, latitude, longitude, climate, all that stuff. There's a formula you can punch numbers into to see how, if you can measure the dot of algae, you can say, oh, that dot is 375 years old. That dot is like 50 years old.
Really?
Depending on how big it is, because they grow at a very specific calculable rate. And so there's one of those things on the star, And it's like, oh, and so I got curious. I looked into it, found the calculations. So, you know, if it grew on that star, it was after it was painted on the rock. So you can kind of calculate backwards, right? So that's interesting. So everywhere you go, Algonquin or whatever, if you find these round algae blooms that are on, not waterborne, but mm-hmm. it's like the dots on the rocks, they have a very specific growth rate.
Cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. It's the same thing for, say, you can also get a calculation for trees. So if you can estimate its height and you its diameter, the species, the climate, the latitude, longitude, yada, yada, yada. And you can punch those numbers in and you can see like that black walnut is 225 years old.
Right.
Right. So instead of
cutting it down and counting the rings,
exactly,
and then stand it back up,
exactly,
because that doesn't work.
So it's a rough calculation, but it gets you within like 5 or 10% estimate, right, of the age.
Yeah.
So that's neat to see that kind of stuff. So I was teaching this to the kids, right? So see those dots? You can calculate the almost the exact age within 5 or 10% of the age of that dot, how long it was growing. So, like, you know, half an inch every 10 years type thing, right?
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah.
Cool. So you'll go back to Killarney with the family?
Absolutely. So we've decided we're going to, the next couple of years, this is going to be the goal, is to investigate different areas of Killarney. And I want to get into the northern area where it's mostly crown land outside the park.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a park within a park there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you look at the Killarney park map, there's a water trails Killarney Provincial Park, and then there's Killarney Provincial Park.
You want to make sure you're looking at Provincial Park.
Yes.
Not National.
Yes.
Because the National Park's over in Ireland.
Yeah, yes, yes. You don't want that one. Yeah.
None of the things they're talking about is on this map. I don't know where he went.
Geez, we talked about my trip on this.
Yeah, we got a couple other things to talk about, so it's going to be an extra long show. Mr. Chatty Cathy. No, you know what? People want to hear about your trips.
Yeah, so. It was good. It was very interesting. Very interesting. I'm sad about the Perseid meter shower. We didn't get to see it, but otherwise, fantastic trip.
And lucking into sites.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. And so when we were leaving, there was a lot of empty sites, mm-hmm. but the weather was coming in. So people just didn't show up, right?
There's a lot of fair weather.
Yeah.
Trippers.
Yeah. There was a... When we booked onto Bell like 5 days before the trip, there was like two or three sites that had random dates available. And when we went into the office before we hit Bell again on our last final two nights, I just walked in and says, yeah, we're supposed to be on Gray last night. I don't want to do that portage, so I want to stay Bell. And so he says, yeah, it's almost wide open. It's like, well, really?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cancellations.
Well, you know, and the flip side, I'd rather people be canceling
and
if they're not sure.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not used to that kind of weather or uncomfortable in that kind of weather. And, you know, rather than cancel, then, as opposed to just not showing
up. Just not showing up.
Yeah.
And so if people at least cancel, it gives opportunity for people to go, oh, I want that site instead or whatever, right? And it's also nice with Killarney that you are booking a numbered site. Whereas you go to Algonquin, it's like you book a lake. So there's six campsites on this lake. Let's see what's left.
Right.
Whereas if you're booking in Killarney, you know exactly what site you're going to, which is a...
So it's not a first come, first serve sort of thing, and you're rushing to get there.
Yeah. It's also a different mental dynamic. So yes, you're not rushing to get there. And normally in Algonquin, you'd like pull ashore. Okay, let's wander around. Is this going to be good enough or we have to move on? But no, it was like unload. And it's like, I hadn't even looked at the campsite yet. Unload, because it doesn't matter. This is where we're staying, right?
Right.
It does not matter. It's where this is our site. So it was kind of, it was a different mental model.
And if you don't know what the site is like.
They do have pictures.
Is there?
Just like in car camping.
Yeah.
So you go to the Killarney Provincial Park, you can click through about three pictures per campsite. And so you can get an idea of what's there.
Okay. So you're not going to show up on a site that'll hold one tiny tent when you've got three tents.
Correct.
Good.
So it does give you those numbers, that estimate. Although when we stayed on Bell 134, It was, there's no level spot on that campsite at all. It's like, and which it's when you're in a bug tent and you have to drag the kid back inside the tent because he wiggles too much during the night. It's like, okay, drag Beckett back inside.
Well, it's him snuffling to get back in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so sometimes when you're looking at a campsite, it's like, that's a good tent spot, but there's a cliff right there. Beckett's going to end up over the cliff.
Think of the money you'll save.
Yes, I know.
Think of the money you'll save and the hassles and the. Oh.
Anyways, well,
good.
Enough of my trip.
Glad you had a good time.
Yes.
To continue on with emails, we received an email from one of our listeners. So sometimes when we're talking on the podcast, we wander from topic to topic, briefly make mention of things, but don't go into depth on the subject.
We do that a lot. I notice it sometimes, too. It's like, oh, we didn't really expand on that thought.
Yeah, because it was just a pass-by, just sort of an addition to kinda, the...
Yeah, we glanced off a topic, and we're not going to return to it, and everyone goes, hey, what about that thing you said?
Yeah. Well, recently we had Kevin Callan on the show, and we quickly glazed over his subject. One of our listeners, Dan, had a, what's that? Moment. sorry, Dan, we've been paddling for so many years. Sometimes we forget that there's newer folks out there who don't have as much experience. That's just one of the unfortunate side effects to, you just start going, oh yeah, because we know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to stop and think, oh, well, not everybody knows, that sort of thing. So we got an email. Gents, enjoyed listening to your chat with Kevin Callan in the Prospector 14 review, but at one point you mentioned something about bow paddler doing power strokes. As an at best adequate on a good day paddler, I need more info. What were you talking about? Inquiring minds want to know. So it isn't a specific stroke.
No.
The bow paddler is there to provide forward momentum.
Mm-hmm. They're the engine.
They're there to help power the canoe, and that's it. They're not there to steer or choose directions, you know, for like 95% of the time.
Yeah.
There may be times when they're required to do some basic strokes, such as draw or pry or cross draw, some bracing, that sort of thing. They would be expected to be more active in whitewater. But in plain flat water paddling, they are there to be a power paddler and weight in the bow. So just continuous forward strokes. You're helping power the boat forward. That's all we meant by the power strokes. Other strokes may apply when on the river or coming upon rocks, submerged logs, and coming up to the portage where you might have to do a draw or something like that or a pry. Like when you're on a log,
heading straight for a rock,
that sort of thing. So yeah, when we're talking about power strokes, it's just you're just paddling straight forward. You can put your head down and not have to worry about where you're going, and
which is good. Right? Exactly, you can just turn your brain off and think about whatever, and just kind of paddle along. You don't have to focus on steering or direction or
you can daydream as long as you're paddling.
Yeah.
You know,
I will add, though, it's good if you have a good sense of, so depending on the angle of the paddle as it enters the water from the bow, like I'm still trying to get Siobhan to get a sense, because she will not be paying attention to the attack face of the paddle when she's paddling the bow. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly have to do an overcorrection, because she'll, depending on what she's thinking or doing, she'll like constantly be pulling the bow to the right or constantly pulling the bow to the left. And it's like, no, it's just pull straight ahead. But what does that mean? It's like,
yeah. Well, also the other thing is if the person in the front is not, doesn't have as powerful a stroke as the person in the back.
Yeah.
Because I find sometimes when I'm just getting that groove, like I get some pretty strong strokes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if I'm on paddling on the left side and Tracy's on the right, we're doing all these left hand or right hand turns because I'm doing more power. Right?
Yeah.
And then she's not.
Yes.
Sort of
exactly.
Matching that. So I've got to, slow down here a bit or not so much power behind the stroke sort of deal. So.
And I've gotten pretty good at steering the boat from the bow too. it's just over the years you practice mm-hmm. that. It's like, so if I know what we're heading for, I can help assist, keep us on track. And there's a couple times where you're coming along and it's like suddenly you see a rock right dead ahead that it's like an inch below the water line. It's like, yikes. And you do a deep pry or, you know,
reach out and do a nice draw.
Just do a deep draw and it's like, oh, turn quick. So, yeah.
Just so you can hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Titanic.
Yeah. Hope that helps, Dan. If you do hear us talking about something on one of our episodes and you're like, wait, what was that?
Yeah.
Drop us a line and let us know. Because like I said, we have our list of stuff we need to cover. And we wander left and right like a couple of drunk sailors.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so... we have no problem going back and clarifying if we know somebody's missed something. Last one I got here. Actually, Ariana's over in Japan having a great time. And she said, did you hear about this? The Japanese Coast Guard rescued a Mexican national stranded on the largest of the Diutai Islands, which are also known as the Senkaku Islands in Japanese. During interrogation, the Mexican man told Japanese Coast Guard officers that he had planned to reach Taiwan with the canoe he was paddling. Man was discovered waving for help by a Japanese patrol boat. Coast Guard called for a helicopter to assist with the rescue. The report indicated that a canoe was taken from Yonaguni Island several days before the man's discovery, but it was not initially reported to police. Yonaguni Island, part of Japan's Okinawa Prefecture, is a little over 110 kilometers from Yilan on Taiwan's east coast. It is assumed the man departed Yonaguni in the canoe and became disoriented before drifting north and ending up on the largest of the five islands. Reports said the man was attempting to leave Japan illegally to bypass formal immigration procedures and that he was stranded on the island for a couple of days before his rescue. The Diutai Islands are a cluster of islands claimed by Taiwan, Japan, and China. They are located approximately 165 kilometers north of Japan's Ishigaki Island and about 190 kilometers northeast of Taiwan's Keelung. Islands are currently administered by Japan and are forbidden to the public.
That part caught me by surprise. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of questionable stuff here. Like, this dude stole a canoe and there's a lot of open water there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's islands quite far apart and this dude is in a open canoe.
It's just a fluke ocean. That he got there.
That he didn't die.
He could have just drifted past everything.
Yeah.
Sean's theory.
And I think you're right.
The man is trying to circle the earth by traveling from country to country without a passport, seeing how far he can make it. They never said how he got to Japan, why he was in Japan.
Yeah. They did use the word interrogation.
Yes.
But also, I think what, like I said earlier, it kind of surprised me that these islands are forbidden to the public. I wonder why.
I think maybe because
they're remote. You can't and they're disputed, protect the people.
I guess, I don't know if disputed is the right word, but they're claimed by three different countries.
China, Taiwan, and Japan.
So they don't want somebody going on there and starting to set stuff up. And then the other two countries going, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah. And, right? and there's that. And there's also the fact that if they're that remote, then the government has a responsibility to protect their people. And like you hear about this in about 40, 50 years ago in Newfoundland, a lot of these remote townships on Newfoundland, the government just come in and says, we're not supporting you guys anymore. You're too remote. We can't afford it. You're wasting money. Like, yeah, you guys, this town maybe has been here since the early 1900s, but we're closing you down.
Yeah.
And so
there's a lot of towns like that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's But it's just, it's interesting, all these. And if you look at the map, it's like there's so many little islands.
Yeah.
Japan is surrounded by like Taiwan, China, Russia.
What you say is 20 kilometers from the north edge of Hokkaido,
yeah,
where Ariana is.
Yeah.
It's 20 kilometers to Russia.
Right there.
Right? I know people that'll kayak that without a second thought.
It's a day trip.
Yeah. Where are you going? I'm going to Russia for the afternoon. See you this evening.
Gonna get me some vodka.
Oh, I told you. Actually, I lied. I got one more thing.
Okay.
This, because we're getting to the end of the season here, this is going to affect next year as well.
Oh, yes.
As of June 20th, 2024, fines under the Fisheries Alberta Act increased from $324 to $4,200 for failing to stop at a watercraft, with a watercraft at an open inspection station. Now, remember we were talking about the whole inspection paddling in Alberta. If you come from Ontario, you got to wait so many days till you put your boat in the water and all that. So from $324 to $4,200 for the fun.
They're starting to take the invasive species thing very seriously.
Very seriously. From $180 to $600 for failing to remove a drain plug when transporting a watercraft on a roadway.
Isn't that something? So you don't pull the plug?
$600. Right? Watercraft include, but not limited to, trailered boats, non-motorized boats such as kayaks and canoes, inflatables such as rafts, kayaks, and paddleboards.
So if you bypass one of these inspection stations and you got a canoe on your roof,
$4,200.
Whoa.
Which is the price of a new canoe.
Yes.
When highway signage indicates that a watercraft inspection station is open, it is mandatory that everyone transporting a watercraft must report to the on-site inspectors and have their boats, trailers, and other water-related equipment checked for invasive species such as zebra and caiga mussels and plants. Bypassing an open inspection station while transporting a watercraft is a violation of the Fisheries Alberta Act and can result in a $4,200 fine. Additionally, all watercrafts must have their drain plugs pulled while being transported on the Alberta highways. $600 if you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google Fisheries Alberta Act for more information. So if you're heading out west or you're already out there,
if you, yeah,
you
if,
got a watercraft
like
on your
we're
boat.
We're talking stand-up paddle boards, canoes, kayaks. If you got some kind of watercraft, it's going to be expensive.
It's going to be very expensive.
Yeah. Can you imagine? And like we're used to here seeing the way stations for transport trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Way station open, all trucks must stop.
Yeah.
And it's like, so now in Alberta, they have those same things, but it's like it's a watercraft open inspection station. It's like, yikes.
Right?
Hmm.
Wow. I wonder how much money they've made off that this year. Well, I mean, the
without teeth, laws don't have any effect.
Yeah.
And so at $4,200, it's like, oh, I'm stopping, right?
Yeah. I remember my dad, when we used to transport our aluminum boats, he always pulled the plug.
Yeah.
Because any excess water would just drain out as you're driving.
Yeah. And, right? And if you don't pull the plug, you're just wasting gas towing an extra 100 pounds of water.
Yeah. So that was, but I mean, what if you forget one day?
I know.
Just honestly forget one day.
Yeah. Zoinks.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I've got this week.
Yes. I've already talked to Chatty Cathy. Yes. Well, you kept asking questions.
It's my job. It's what I do. It's what I get paid the money for.
Yeah. Sean interviewed Derek today.
Right? I've had better interviews.
Oh!
All right. Nothing else for you?
Nothing else.
You're happy to be back?
I am happy to be back. I'm exhausted.
Right?
It's a lot of work. Like, we didn't do a lot of paddling, but it's just the heat.
The heat kills you.
Yeah, the heat really wore me down.
I mean, that's the one thing. I don't mind the bugs.
Yeah.
Once that heat and humidity start, I'm just like... Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a big swimmer. I don't enjoy being in. I enjoy being on the water, not in the water. Yeah. And if I'm not out fishing or paddling, I'm finding shade.
Yeah.
Wherever I can find shade. I mean, I burn super fast too, right? But I'm in the trees, in a chair, in a hammock, in the tent having a snooze, mm-hmm. whatever, out of the hot.
Yeah.
I mean, hot just don't. go together.
Yeah, and so there was the kids did a lot of paddling. Beckett still needs some work on it, but Stella kept the right stroke pace, and she matched her mother at the bow, and we paddled together, and so Stella did a lot of work paddling. It was great, but out there in the heat, paddling along, it's like, man, I had crusty salt all over my face and arms. It's like, what's going on here?
Well, that's like when you get some of those really zigzaggy, windy rivers.
Yeah.
And then you're just, and then all of a sudden opens up, and there is no escape. And that sun's just beating down, and you're like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to bed at night, you lay down, and it's nice and cool, and then you get a spider in your ear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Your life is hell.
It's very disturbing.
Well, all righty. On that note, gives me the willies just thinking about it. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all 444 episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.